In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit, and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. So we want to begin tonight with November the 9th, 1925, and the Lord is speaking about fusing. So Louisa said, I was fusing myself in the holy divine volition, according to my usual way, to then do my adoration to the crucified. So you fuse yourself first and then do whatever prayer you're doing in the divine will, which we have done at the rosary tonight. And since more than once while doing my acts in the supreme volition, I had been caught by sleep, which had never happened before. I had not completed the first thing nor done the adoration. So I said to myself, first I will do the adoration and then if I'm not caught by sleep, I will fuse myself in the divine will. Now the Lord is letting her slip here for the sake of teaching you and me what the divine order actually is. So while I was thinking about this, she didn't have to say anything. My sweet Jesus came out from within my interior. That is Luke 17:21 and 1 Corinthians 3:16. The kingdom of God is within you. So he placed his face close to mine and he told me. So this is a very intimate thing he's telling her. My daughter, I want you to fuse yourself in my divine will first. So there's your instruction for all your new classes. You must come before the Supreme Majesty to reorder all human wills in the will of their Creator. Second, to repair with my own will for all the acts of the wills of creatures that are opposed to mine. As third, my will came out of us in order to divinize the creature. And the rest of the sentence doesn't make sense. Okay, because my book says, and capital W, will do, we want. That's not English. It's not a sentence. It's not anything. So I think perhaps that what they were trying to say was that God wanted the creatures to do God's will. Okay. But there shouldn't be a capital on that W. My will came out of us in order to divinize the creature. So therefore, if we're to be divinized, we're to be at that level and carry out the will of God. And when this will, that's the divine will, is rejected by them to do their own will, it is a most direct offence to the Creator. Now, it takes quite a lot of instruction for us to come to realise that in very practical ways in our own everyday lives. It is to deny all the goods of creation and to move away from His likeness. Now, notice, as we have moved into volume 18, the Lord is beginning to refer to the divine will and to His in the singular as well. So we're talking about God's will and He can refer to as His will. So as they move away from the divine will, they also move away from the divine likeness as well. Do you think that it is trivial that fusing yourself in my will, you place the whole of this will of mine as though on your lap, which though it is one, brings its divinizing act to each creature. So here we have this enormous reality that fusing in the divine will means we're entering into that divine will that's in everything and in everything. And therefore, we are touching everything and everyone that's in that divine will. And even though the act of the divine will is one, it brings its divinizing act to each creature, just like the sun brings its light to every part of the earth. And reuniting all these acts in my will together, you bring them before the Supreme Majesty, one, to requite them with your will together with mine, two, to requite them with your love, because God is love, redoing all the acts opposite of those of creatures. And three, you press this same will of mine to surprise the creatures once again with more repeated acts so that they may know the divine will and that they may be able to receive the divine will within themselves as the prime act. Now, the divine will is in us anyway, but to receive the divine will as the prime mover or the prime act inside of us means that the divine will has taken over from the human will, and therefore we are living at this divine level that he actually wants us to live at. And therefore all the acts are at that level and have that extraordinary effect. So he wants us doing the requiting in love and in reparation for everybody, so that he can go to others and he can surprise them with wonderful gifts to draw them into the divine will. So the adoration of my wounds, more than one does this for me. See, the translation is terrible. What Jesus is saying, there's lots of people who will do the Stations of the Cross who will look at some aspect of the Passion, like devotion to the divine face or whatever. He says, but they're not doing it having fused in my will. So they're doing it at a lower level. So this is where Louisa had said at the beginning of this, that, well, okay, I'll do the adoration first and then I will fuse. And he said, no. You've got to fuse first so that you can be raised up to this higher level and do it on the divine level. So he says, others can do this for me. But giving me back the rights of my will as the prime act which I did towards man, no one does this for me. He had to teach Louisa reveal this to us so that we could begin to do it. Therefore, it's your duty to do it. And you, that is Louisa, have a special mission about my will. So he's revealing this specifically to her. She has to pass it on to the rest of the church so that gradually we can pick it up and begin to do it. And if sleep catches you while you are doing it, your celestial father will look at you with love in seeing that you sleep in his arms. Now, what he's saying is, if you have fused yourself in the divine will and then you fall back to sleep, as far as the heavenly father is concerned, you're sleeping on his lap and you are still operating at the divine level. But if you go asleep on your own level, then you won't reach that. So he says, no, you must fuse first. You must fuse first. St. Therese of Lisieux had a problem of staying awake for early morning prayer because Carmelites pray at an ungodly hour of the morning, if you excuse my expression. And she was asked once, you're not having a problem about sleeping during prayer when you should be giving your adoration and praise to God. And she said, no, he doesn't stop being God. I think that's a fantastic thing. And the image I would give you is an infant in its mother's arms, and the child has been fed at the breast. So the child is happy and satisfied and falls right asleep in the mother's arms. Does the mother cease to be mother? Does she cease to do all the things that the child needs? The answer is no. In fact, she takes more care because the child has now gone into this sleep state. So Jesus is saying to Louisa, if you fuse in the divine will and then fall asleep, no problem, because you're falling asleep at the right level. So we need to be sure that our nights are in the divine will as well as our days. And I would give you Psalm 103:1 for that. My soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. So if sleep catches you, Jesus said, while you're doing it, our celestial Father will look at you with love in seeing you asleep in his arms and seeing his little daughter who, even while sleeping, holds on her laps all the acts of the divine will. You see, once you're fused, you have all the acts of the divine will with you to repair them, to requite them with love, and to give to each act of our will the honour, the sovereignty and the right that befits it. Therefore, first fulfil your duty. This is divine advice. This is what, if I was putting a note on the side of this page here, I would write divine advice. First fulfil your duty, and then, if you can, you will also do the adoration of my wounds. Now, what's your duty? Enter into the divine will. Fuse yourself in the divine will. Reach out onto this higher plane where God can do incredible things. So let's go on to November 12th, 1925. Talking about Louisa being called to a divine mission. So Louisa obeys. I was fusing myself in the holy divine wishful according to my usual way, and my sweet Jesus, moving in my interior, clasped me all to himself and placed himself in the act of giving me a lesson and a correction. And he told me, my daughter, be attentive in doing your acts in my will. You see, the problem is that we get very used to saying things, and you may be very used to making certain acts, and so they'll rhyme off. He says, no, 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 be very careful in doing acts in my will. You must know that for one who is called to be the head of a mission, now it's even more important in her case, the more he encloses of the good pertaining to that mission, the more good he will be able to communicate to others. These goods will be like many seeds which he will lend to others, so that whoever has the fortune of wanting to acquire those seeds may become the possessor of the harvest of those seeds. Now he's saying to her, as he has said in earlier volumes, that each act you do in the divine will is adding another thread, another thread, another thread to this wonderful garment of the divine will acts, which is our participation in creation, redemption and sanctification. But he says it's also creating seeds for future people. And so the more we do them, the more, he's going to use the term in very soon, the more divine currency we actually make, so that we can exchange, if you like, for souls. So he's telling her that the more carefully she does the acts, and the more she repeats the acts, the more treasure she's leaving behind for the generations coming after her. He said, and he gives an example then of Adam. This happened with Adam, you know. Being the first man, he was constituted the head of all generations. And being the head, it was necessary for him to possess the seeds in order to give to others what is necessary for the development of human life. So everything had to be placed in Adam so it could be passed on to future generations. So regardless of the fact that these seeds have been expanded, and then there's an extraordinary word, delucidated, which is not in the dictionary. Okay, let me use a much simpler word, explained. Or elucidated. Once these have been expanded and explained, once they're known, and then according to the goodwill of the following generations, to the capacity and the application that they have used over these very seeds. So once this stuff is there and it has been explained and passed on to the next generations, then they can make use of these seeds. So even though it's going to go down the generations, Jesus said, nevertheless, Adam had them all within himself. Now, he's continuously telling us that the sun has all the light, and the sun passes on this light to the earth. And no matter how much it passes on to the earth, it still has all the light. So Adam has all of this within himself, even though he has to pass it on to the generations. Louisa will have it all, even though she has to pass it on to the generations. So nevertheless, Adam had them all within himself, and it can be said that everything comes from him. So, of course, you know then we're going to be told that everything comes from Louisa, since she's the head of this mission. He was endowed with all sciences. Now, the problem with the word science, and sometimes I replace it with the word knowledge, is because the word science is quite complicated today, and it may not quite touch what Jesus is saying. He's saying all knowledge, which includes the natural sciences that we have today. But for us today, the word science is actually very specific and may not include the wisdom and understanding and everything that the Lord intends. That's why I sometimes put the word knowledge instead. So he was endowed with all sciences, with all knowledge. And so we're going to discover what this knowledge was. What others learn with so many efforts, all our schooling and all the rest of it, he possessed as a gift, infused knowledge. And we have seen from the very beginning of these writings that the Lord gave Louisa infused knowledge by this extraordinary science of mystical living, or we say mystical sciences. Okay, and it's all infused. She didn't get it from books. So Adam had everything infused. Why? He was the first. If it wasn't infused, he wouldn't have it. So he possessed the knowledge of all things of the earth. He had the knowledge of all plants and all herbs and the virtue that each of them contained. Now, another word that's used continuously by the translators is the word virtue. And they use it in all kinds of contexts. Most of the time I translate that word virtue as power. Here it probably means the effects. So he had the knowledge of all plants and all herbs and the effects that they would have on human beings. You see where I'm getting the word effects? In other words, ancient peoples today who have not yet been destroyed by modern life still know that the answer to all human illness is in plants. It's in herbs. I actually had the privilege of living close to a clinic in West Africa where the man who ran the clinic never charged his patients unless he cured them. And all he did was he went to the herbs of the earth and to find out where was the solution. Okay. Now, somebody sent me a little chat there telling me that I could use the word benefits, which is good. So thank you. Thank you for that. So all the benefits you can get from all of these herbs. So Adam knew all of that by infused knowledge. He didn't have to learn it from anybody. He had the science of all species of animals and how he could use them. Now, that statement is illustrated in the most childlike way in the book of Genesis, where you're told that all the animals were lined up in front of Adam and that he named them. And he decided, you know, which were different species and realized that the human race was a completely different species. So you couldn't cross marry these species, that they were all different and they all had different functions and everything. It's given to you in a very childlike way in Genesis. So he knew all about all the species of animals and how to use them. He had the science of music. Isn't that incredible? So there you see I'd want to put the word knowledge. He had the knowledge of music, singing, of writing. Isn't that amazing? And of medicine. Hence his knowledge of the plants. He had knowledge of everything. So when he lived in the fullness of the divine will, he also lived in the fullness of knowledge and understanding. And when the prophet Isaiah gives us a list of the sevenfold gifts of the Spirit that dwelled in the Messiah, it's wisdom, number one, understanding, counsel, fortitude, and then knowledge. Now notice that all of these actually intertwine together. I'm going to resist the temptation of going into it because otherwise I'll do none of this. But they're all actually intertwined. So when you're told that Adam had the fullness of knowledge, all of these gifts are intertwining in him and he just knows what to do. I think that's fantastic. So I want to give you the Book of Wisdom, chapter 7, verses 15 to 21 there, that actually speaks of all the different aspects of knowledge. So if the generations possessed each one its special science, Adam possessed them all. You can see then how it is necessary that one who must be the head must enclose everything within themselves. So what Jesus is saying to Louisa is, I have to give you all the knowledge or the science, whatever word you want to use, about the divine will. And if you get it all, you'll be able to pass it on to the generations. If you don't get it all, you can't be the head. And it's given to you with infused knowledge, just as it was given to Adam. Adam couldn't deserve it. You couldn't deserve it. Whenever we're dealing with God, we can't deserve anything. It's given to us free, gratis. It's wonderful. In the next paragraph, then, we're talking about Louisa and the divine knowledge that's infused into her. So it's the same with you, my daughter. Since I have called you to be the head of a special mission, more than a new Adam. That's very powerful language, because the New Testament calls Jesus the second Adam. So because we're dealing with a completely new stage in the development of spirituality and relationship with God, and the redoing of everything so that God can actually come and reign upon the earth, he says that it's better than a new Adam. And here it's not about human sciences or human knowledge, but about the science of sciences, which is my will, which is the science of all heaven. In other words, I'm infusing into you the knowledge that all the dwellers of heaven have. It's the way they live, because it's time for the fulfillment of the Lord's Prayer, that the will of God would be done on earth in the same way as it's done in heaven. So he has to give her this knowledge of how the will of God is actually done in heaven, and bring her step by step by step to the reality of this, so that she can pass on that invitation and knowledge to us. I want you, Jesus said, to enclose within yourself all the seeds which my will contains. Now, all the seeds, that's all the pieces of knowledge, all the pieces of revelation about the divine will. And the more acts you do in it, the more knowledge you will acquire. That's very interesting. In other words, the more you put this into practice, the more you grasp what is being done. And therefore, everything is in the living of the divine will. The more acts you do in it, the more knowledge you acquire, and the more rays of light that you will place on the sun of my will, so that with greater fullness of light, the divine will be able to diffuse more for the good of the generations. Now, when I was meditating on this, the thing that really struck me was the humility of God, that he asks one of his own little creatures to actually cooperate with him in a massive work that he wants to do. This kind of humility is really beyond us. It's incredible. And I want you to do it in such a way that, stirred by the fullness of light, they will be able to know with greater clarity the good which my will contains. So the more Louisa works this, if I can use that language, the more light will be shed on living in the divine will. And the more light that's shed on it through Louisa, the more clarity there is for us, and the easier it is for us to pick it up. So we will get the clarity of what it means to live in the divine will, and the great good that we can have, and have our lives enriched by it. And then, of course, he goes back to talking about the sun as an example. It will be the same as with the sun, which, though it possesses such great fullness of light, can easily take the whole earth as though in its power, warm it, illuminate it, and fertilize it in such a way that all may know, some more, some less, the good that it does in bringing its light to all. But if the sun, in the height of its sphere, were poor in light, the light which descends down below could not fully illuminate the earth. That's a wonderful explanation of what he's just said, because he's saying to Louisa, you need to work this divine will in such a way that the light in you becomes greater and greater and greater and greater, and therefore for the people following you, they're going to be able to see with greater clarity. So here he's saying that if the light of the sun was poor, there's an awful lot you couldn't accomplish on the earth. At the most, if the sun was poor, some small portion of the earth, that rotates closer to the sun would get it. But if to the sun, which was to illuminate the earth naturally, I gave such fullness of light for the good of all the generations, much more do I want to fill the fullness of the light of the sun of my will. So there you have the sun. He keeps on giving the sun as an illustration of what he's trying to say. So taking the divine will now as the divine sun, the more light that it sheds, then the more the creatures on the earth can actually see, hear and understand, and therefore that they can actually participate. So his light enlightens our darkness. Our darkness comes from worldliness and sin and just plain ordinary humanity. And the more we are illumined by studying, I think the big illumination is studying this material line by line, word by word, leaving nothing out. And going back over it and over it and over it. And to me, there is grace in actually reading it, even if you don't understand some parts of it. And that means we're exposing ourselves to this light, and we're allowing, therefore, the infusion of this light to come into us. So we don't need to be people who have university education. Louisa didn't have, because the target is not the intellect. The target is your spirit. It's your innermost being. And once that is illumined, then you're like a child can take something globally into itself. We can do that spiritually as well. So I'm giving such fullness of light for the good of all generations. Notice all the generations to come, which are absolutely divine. Much more do I want to fill the fullness of light of the Son of my will, which must illumine souls. It must warm souls. So it's the more you touch this material, the more the soul is opened up to realize that there is a wonderful future. I can have that if I want it. I can enter into this. I don't have to be somebody special. I only have to want this badly enough to open up to the Lord and let him purify me and let it actually happen. So this material has to illumine souls, it has to warm them, it has to cast into them the fecundity of the seed of divine sanctity. Now, he alone can put divine sanctity into us. Just as I chose Adam as the head, just as I chose a point in the heavens in which to fix the center of the sun so that it could illuminate the earth, so I've chosen you, Louisa, to be the center of the sun of my will. And the fullness of light must be so great that all may be able to enjoy it. Now notice the all. God is not a respecter of persons. And this gift is opened up to absolutely anybody, anywhere, any age, any country, anything. So long as they're willing to open up and let God reorder their lives back into the original pattern. So the fullness of this light must be so great that all may be able to enjoy it, all may be invested by this light, and each one make it its own. Now, this is something that I've stressed to my classes from the very beginning, and that the Lord doesn't want each one of us to look like each other. He wants this mystery to work its way through your personality, through your character, through your experience of life, through your version of being a human being, so that heaven can look down and say, well, there's my Mary. There's my John. And you can see from the formation that Jesus gave the apostles that they were very distinct from each other. And he didn't ask Peter to be like John. That would have spoiled the story completely. Because you had to have Peter mysteries and you had to have John mysteries. And so the sheer variety that the Lord wants to produce in all of us, I think is one of the wonders. It's like producing a fantastic tapestry, and every single colour and every single shape and everything is all part of it. And if one colour is missing, then the whole thing is spoiled. So each one of us is part of this wonderful, wonderful thing that God is doing. Ephesians 2:10, we're God's work of art, created in Christ Jesus. And so I've underlined this variety all the time, that we must not be copycats, you know, and don't be afraid to say your own prayers in the divine will. And don't be afraid that you mightn't say something clever, or you mightn't put it together with all the wonders that you can find in a book. But it's coming from the depths of your being. And it's you. And you'll say, oh yeah, that's Frances. Yeah, she never says it nicely, you know. But she says it. And so the variety is important. And he wants each one of us to be our own special, authentic selves. Because he made you. And he made you special. And he made you different. And he gave you the call. And he has a place for you exactly in this wonderful tapestry of glory. A work of art. A work of light. A work of love, a work of glory that will glorify him forever. This variety is extremely important. And that's why Jesus says to Louisa, this is why your complete acts in my will are actually needed, as well as the knowledge that I keep manifesting to you. Because the more he manifests to her, the more she's able to go deeper and deeper and deeper into it. Okay, so in the next paragraph, you can ask the question, how many acts do you have to do? I have a little heading for myself on this paragraph, and it's the history of the acts. It's the usual way of the eternal wisdom, Jesus said, to establish the acts of the creature in order to give completion to the good which it wants to do in her. God knows exactly the number of acts you and I are actually going to do between now and the time we see him. We're completely free, but he knows how much you're going to actually do. But he's talking about something bigger here. And so it happened for the coming of redemption. That's the 4,000 years that we celebrate in Advent for the coming of redemption. So it happened for the coming of redemption of the eternal word upon the earth. It took the course of 4,000 years, and during this time, all the acts which creatures were to do in order to dispose themselves to earn the great good of redemption had been established. So in heaven, the whole economy of your redemption was worked out. Exactly how much prayer input had to be put there to prepare the way was already established. Okay. As well as all the graces and the knowledge which the Supreme Majesty was to give in order to make known the same good which the descent of the word would bring into their midst. So while all the prayers and sacrifices and acts of the people of the Old Testament were all being done, at the same time, God was revealing to them by infused knowledge through the prophets who this Redeemer was and all about him. So they were getting the knowledge and they were doing the acts at the same time, just like ourselves in preparing for this new era. And so, here come the patriarchs, the holy fathers, the prophets, and all the good of the Old Testament, who with all their acts were to cover the way, the staircase, in order to reach the fulfillment of the longed for redemption. Okay, so the staircase then reminds you of Jacob. Do you remember the ladder up to heaven with the angels of God ascending and descending, carrying out God's economy for him? Okay, and the next paragraph covers a very important answer to questions that people have asked over the years, and that is, when you pray for about other people's acts, do you change them into divine will acts? The answer is no. An act is what it is at the moment it is done. So if my act is to take this pen and to move it somewhere and it's done simply as a human act, it remains that. So we have to see what work we do in the divine will to cover other people's acts. This is not enough, Jesus said. As good and holy as their acts were, there was the so very high wall of the original sin. Oh, the very language tells you there was this huge barrier. And of course, studying the Old Testament, you can see that the original sin cropped up with problem after problem after problem in all their falling into idolatry. So there was the very high wall of original sin, which maintained the division between the human race and God. So this is why a virgin was needed. One conceived without sin, innocent and holy, and enriched by God with all graces. Now, in other words, there had to be one person who was our tainted nature's solitary boast, that she was outside of this arena of sin. Therefore, she was outside of this ability that she could be pulled down by Satan. She made all the good acts of the course of 4,000 years as though they were her own. So there she is, embracing all the acts of everybody from Adam down to herself. She covered them. Notice the covering. She didn't change them. She covered them with her innocence, with her sanctity and her purity in such a way that the divinity would see those acts through the acts of the innocence of the holy creature. So it's like as if you put this wonderful gold wrapping on this gift and you hand it to the Father, and the Father sees this wonderful gold wrapping and the love with which it is offered, and therefore there's more mercy given to the people you're praying for. It's good to remember this if you're praying for people. She covered them with her innocence, her sanctity, her purity, in such a way that the divinity could see those acts through the acts of this innocent and holy creature, who not only embraced all the acts of the ancients, but surpassed them because she was doing them in the divine will. And this is why she obtained the descent of the word upon the earth. So what Jesus is saying here is that she incorporated all that went before her. And at the level that she was at, she won this incredible grace of covering them to make them more special in the eyes of God, to lift them up to a higher value. And so, with all that went before her and her own divine will acts, she won. And so Louisa is asked to do the same thing, except that Louisa has to go not only the 4,000 years before Christ, but the 2,000 years after him as well. She's got to pick up all the acts of the church. It happened to all the good acts of the ancients as to one who has much gold and silver, but the image of the king, which gives the value of money to that precious metal, is not impressed on it. Now, this is very, very interesting, because you'd have to say to yourself, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the acts of all these saints. They just weren't at the high level. So what was the difference? And so Jesus gives the simplest of all explanations you could possibly give, that you can have a gold coin, but it doesn't have the stamp of the reigning monarch, and therefore it can't be used as currency. So it was all the acts of all the ancients before our Blessed Mother, all their acts put into her hands became divine currency. I think that's fantastic. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Because now we know what to do with everything else. Put them into her hands as well. So, even though the coin contains value in itself, in other words, these acts were not useless, it cannot be called divine currency. My book says value for money. Divine currency is what he's talking about. However, suppose that the gold or silver were acquired by the king, that is taken into Our Lady's hands and offered now as divine acts, even though you can't change the original one. The king accepts it and therefore he can impress his image upon them. And here is the right of currency acquired by that gold. In other words, it has been raised into divine currency. And that's what the Virgin did. She changed all the good acts of all the people who had gone before her into divine currency, and added with all her own acts, that was enough for the coming of the Redeemer. And now you're going to hear, you don't even have to need me to read it, that all the acts of the church from the very beginning have got to be put into Louisa's hands to do the same thing as Blessed Mother has done, to open the way for the divine will. Of course, Louisa doesn't do anything without her Blessed Lady anyway. So that's what the Virgin did. She impressed her innocence, her sanctity, and the divine will, which she possessed as a whole, upon them. As a whole means that there was no part of her at any point from the instant of her conception that wasn't completely given and sacrificed to the divine will. She presented them all together to the divinity. She took all these acts together, and she obtained the longed for Redeemer. So the Virgin completed all the acts which were needed. Notice, she completed. She didn't change them. You can complete them. Because if she changed them, what was the point in them living? What was the point in them struggling? What was the point in them overcoming themselves? What was the point in them trying to be virtuous and grow in virtue and holiness? And there were great saints in the Old Testament. If someone could come along and just change them, it would say that you had no value. It's very interesting what the Lord does. But this wasn't the end, Jesus said. So that the Redeemer might have his field of action upon the earth, and whoever wanted to might use those acts as coins, that is divine currency, with which to purchase heaven for himself, the imprint of innocence, that's the problem with the human race, of sanctity, problem number two, and of the divine will, problem number three, was needed. And the imprint of the operating of the Word himself was needed in order to make man rise to heaven. So our Blessed Mother was able to go this far, and then the Lord himself had to literally raise us from the dead. So that's Ezekiel 37, the raising of the dry bones. The dry bones coming to life. So the Word himself was needed in order to make man rise to heaven. Okay. If that of the Virgin was enough to make me descend into the midst of creatures, in order to make man rise, my divine operating was needed. And it's a very interesting thing. So to get the divine word to descend, you needed all the work of our Blessed Mother. But to get the human race to rise from the dead, that required Jesus himself. And so this is why I embraced all those acts and I made them my own, and I made up for all. Now, I love that. I made up for everything. That's the secret. So everything has got to be put into him. Everything is through him, with him, and in him. I accomplished everything, and for all, I placed the divine imprint on all of those good acts. From the first to the last man who is to come upon the earth. It wasn't just stopping at a particular point. Jesus died for everyone. And this imprint was made by me with unheard of pains, with the shedding of blood. That means he redeemed everything. Every single sin. Every single fault. Everything. He didn't cover it. He redeemed it. And so, like a magnanimous king, I gave to all the currency with which to purchase heaven for themselves. All this had been established by the uncreated wisdom. I love that expression, uncreated wisdom, because in the Old Testament, that was how they identified God, the uncreated wisdom. And there are seven wisdom books. And not even one act of all this could be missing in order for redemption to take place. What you notice in all of this description is the sheer detail with which God deals with things, and that every single part of the plan must be brought to perfection. Nothing can be left out, nothing at all. Now, my daughter, just as it was with redemption, so it will be with the divine will. So you've seen him do this over and over and over again. He'll explain things, and in order to explain something to Louisa, he will go through the mission that our Blessed Mother had and he himself had, and then he'll come to her. So it will be with my will. In order to make it known and to make it reign as the prime act of life, the prime mover in the creature, the fulfillment of acts is needed. So all of our acts in trying to live the divine will are all essential for the whole pattern that the Lord wants. You too, on the example of our celestial mother and of mine, must embrace in my will, number one, all the acts of the Old Testament. Number two, all the acts of our Blessed Mother, the Queen of Heaven. Number three, all those done by myself, which have just been explained. And number four, all those which are done and will be done by all the good and the saints up to the last day. You've got to embrace the whole thing if you're going to be the head of this mission, and that this light and this grace and this glory is to go out to everybody. You must embrace all the acts done by in the Old Testament, those of our Blessed Mother, those done by Jesus, and all Christians and all the good people to the very end. And upon each one of them, you are to place your seal of a requital of love, of blessing and of adoration. You're to do this with the sanctity and power of my will. Now, we have no power, but we can do everything with the power and the sanctity of the divine will. And so it's the most wonderful thing that we can ask the Lord to raise good acts into real sanctity through the sanctity of his divine will. We can make pure acts more pure through the purity of the divine will, and so on and so on. You can make loving acts much more loving, divinely loving, through the love that is the divine will itself. Nothing must escape you. My will embraces everything. You too must embrace everything and everyone. And you must place my will alone at the first place of honour upon all the acts of creatures. Now, there's the adjustment into divine order, because even the best acts of creatures can have a tilt towards the self, or a slight tilt or shadow from the world, and so on. And these acts have all got to be reordered, and that the entire direction of the act is towards the divine will. If you were to do this one by one, it would be a very tall order. My will embraces everything, and you too must embrace everything and everyone, and place my will alone in the first place of honour upon all the acts of creatures. It will be your imprint with which you will imprint the image of my will on all the acts of creatures. This is the beauty we have. It's like as if you take a stamp and you put this divine stamp on something. Therefore, your field is vast. He's talking to Louisa. I want to see you in my will, flowing over all the graces and prodigies which I did in the Old Testament to give me your requital of love and thanksgiving, and in the acts of the patriarchs and the prophets to make up for their love. Now, Louisa is being asked to do this much more than you and me. You and I participate in this mission, but Louisa is the head of this mission, and therefore she has to do it completely. There's not one act in which I do not want to find you, Jesus said. I would not be satisfied or content if I did not find you in all the acts of creatures which have been done and will be done. In other words, your participation in bringing the divine will into all acts, past, present and future, are actually necessary. We have the extraordinary privilege of actually putting our signature on creation, redemption and sanctification. It's amazing. I would not be content if I did not find you in all the acts of creatures which have been done and will be done. Nor would you be able to say that you have completed everything in my will. You would lack something of the true living in the divine will. I like that word. The true living in the divine, that means that you've entered into this completely. That you've taken on this divine will and letting yourself be drawn completely into it. Not partially. The true living in the divine will. Therefore be attentive if you want the fullness of light to be enough to be able to illuminate all peoples with my will. Now the issue is having enough light. Now you know from Matthew 5:17 that Jesus said, you are a lamp on a hill, you must have enough light to shine for absolutely everybody. And here Jesus is saying that Louisa must have enough light for all the people who are to live in the divine will in all the future generations. One who wants to give light to all must embrace all as though in one single embrace. So there you have the sun in its light embracing the whole earth. You have the divine will in one act embracing everything, past, present and future. So you must do it as though in one embrace by making yourself the life and the substitution of everything and everyone. Is my will perhaps not the life of everything? That's John 14:6, I am the way, the truth and the life. Is there not the need then for one who would flow in everyone in order to sweeten this bitterness by substituting an act of life with my own will for each act of the ungrateful creature? Now, there's an enormous amount in what we've just read. Absolutely ginormous. And what I would say to each one of you is that you must take this not just line by line, but word by word. And what I find useful in a thing like this is to write down a list of what is actually being said so that I somehow can take on board the challenge that is there. Now, Louisa was asked to do it in all its fullness as the head of the mission. We're asked to participate. We don't have the same vocation as Louisa. And we're not sitting in a bed 24 hours a day. You have a life to live, you have a family to run, you have a job to do, you have lots of things. So the Lord is asking you to participate, but all of us together will make this wonderful tapestry with the Lord. So I'm going to leave it there for tonight, and we'll take up in November the 19th the next day. And thank you for coming, and God bless.